N4SMH, W4DJW.
KD2BNG, W4DJW.
W4DJW, clear and listening.
DJW, KN4BWA.
Hey Steve, how did your truck fare last night?
Considering what fell out of the sky, I think I did well. I've got one little small dent in my hood, and I got two small dents up in the top of the cab towards the back. So overall, with what fell out of the sky, I'm very pleased.
Well, that's good. No broken glass and dents that a dent puller will pull out. That's not bad.
With what was falling out of the sky, bud, I'm just amazed. I figured I'd come out this morning thinking it'd beat all the pieces, but it turned out all right. I mean, considering. So, now how did you fare?
We got all the flowers and pots and everything up on the porch and in the garage. And then Amy said, what about my car? Because her car's not that old. It's, you know, it's less than, I think we got it around the same time you got your truck. And so we started grabbing. I've got some cardboard in the truck, big sheets of it for that some really big parts came in. And they're in the back of the truck to be taken to the landfill or to a recycling place. We were starting to get all that stuff out, and we were going to cover her car with it and put heavy blankets on top of it, but then the bottom just fell out, and we ran in the house. We didn't do it. We said, it is what it is, but luckily no hail here, so we escaped it this time.
KHC.
Go ahead, contact.
Hey, you
want
to see some devastation, you come over here to Taylor's area. On the, what would be the south side of Wade Hampton between Planet Fitness and East Lee, and then back over through towards East North Street. I tell you, that place is just devastated in there. It is something else.
I'm devastated. What kind of damage? Hail? Wind? What?
Be a tornado went through there because their trees are just all over houses. There's one house, I think it was brick. It was cut half in two. The tree was so massive. And another house had three trees on it. I mean, we're talking about big trees. We're not talking about little stuff. All of that area has got old trees, really large. Big, you know, heavy trees, and boy, they just came down. Over
that stuff was very isolated. That just came through in small areas. What about you, David? I mean, you're north of Wade Hampton, right?
Yeah, 2 miles north of Greer, and nothing like that here. My cousin posted on Facebook some of those trees that were that. The one that had house that had two enormous trees on it, and the root ball that came out of the ground when the tree went over, if you were standing next to it, your head wouldn't even come up to the center of the tree. That's how big the root ball was of those trees that came up. So yeah, I know what Warren's talking about. It's pretty bad. I'm also watching that they've got a helicopter video on WYFF, and I was watching that just a few minutes ago, and big trees on houses, peaks parts of houses laying in the street. It's pretty bad.
Planet Fitness, I don't know exactly where Planet Fitness is, but I do know where Lee Road is, and that's south of Wade Hampton.
Yeah, that's the road I used to live off of. Lee Road goes down to Avon Park, and if you keep on going, you know, you turn off of Lee and you go on Strange Road, you hit Eastside High School. It's in that area.
Well, it's at the intersection really there for Publix, and then Walmart's down just a hair from that. But you go back up one block, and then that's Wesley, and you keep going. You've got the Canopy Car Wash. You got the fire department. You got Corona's, Rose's. got the QT right there. You got Lytles or Little or something like that. But it came across right in through Corona's and just missed Planet Fitness and devastated all in through there.
So you're talking about back behind the old Kmart where Roses is, right?
So actually it would be north of Roses is on the other end of the shopping center, and it would have been on the other. I don't know. Do you know where Corona's? And then there was a little used car lot right next to it, and then there was some woods. So it looked like it. And there's a Savemore grocery store. It looks like it came right through Savemore and Corona's, and kind of angled over, missed pretty much the shopping area where Planet Fitness and Roses is.
Okay, all right. Well, that's on the north side of Wade Hampton. Okay, yeah, a friend of mine lives over off of Eastley Road out there near Edwards Road, so it did not hit out there, right?
Edwards goes, so Edwards is actually just a couple blocks from me, and the corner where Edwards turns into Botany Woods, right there is probably the corner of devastation right there.
Oh, Edwards Road, and you know Botany Woods. Do you know Wellington Green?
A lot of damage in there. Is that Kingsgate area? You can go the back way through over to that area over.
Roger, roger. Wellington Green runs between Kingsgate and the Vaughn's East North Shopping Center there, where that Bilo is.
We have in our church a retired missionary, and their house is back over there. And they had a lot of damage, a tree on the house and all. So there's a lot of damage over there, and that's where that one house was, like, cut in two. Where Edwards turns and goes into Botany Woods, then that becomes Howell, and Howell goes up to East North Street, and then it changes into Haywood Road.
Right, so there's a lot of damage on the left side of Howell Road there into Wellington Green?
The roads, you can't get in there, so just, you know, kind of seeing from Howell, you know, across, seeing where the devastation went, but you can go on some of the roads to the right, on the right side of Howell, and there's just so much devastation in there, in that area also, but I can't believe how wide this thing is. It's just something else.
Roger, roger. David, are you still in there?
Yes, I am, W4DJW. I'm watching the video, the aerial video of it. There's YFF's got a really long aerial video, and just trees and masses that are laid over. All of this in that area that Warren's talking about. Like storage buildings with the roof ripped off of all the storage buildings, and you just see the stuff that's inside that's left. Houses split in two with trees. Cars crushed with trees. It's pretty bad.
KN4VW. I don't know if you remember it or not, but, you know, do you remember Pine Grove Lake where the Landing Apartments is now?
Oh, yeah. I know all that area. Grew up in that area in my teenage years, and when I was starting to drive, burned many, many a tanks of gas all in that area.
Well, if you came out of Pine Grove Lake and went straight across East North Street, that was Imperial Drive, and at the time, my house was the second house, or the first house on the left, right there at the corner of Imperial and Kenilworth. So I'm just wondering if that got by it okay. I'd hate to think that house got tore up bad.
Well, if you go, I'm still watching YF's video, and it's only a quarter of the way through it. I've been watching it since we started talking. And if you, I mean, they're showing you everything. They zoom out so you can get some kind of perspective of where you are, and then they zoom in on the damage so you can see how bad it is. So that's really good aerial footage.
Yep. You remember me telling you about the southern tip of that third storm and how it was going to come through to Greer? That's probably that southern tip of that thing. Boy, I guess it really did hit hard. All right, guys, well, I'm going to get on out of here, and I'll say 73s, and hopefully those folks are going to be okay. So, Dave, can I ask you a question real quick about something technical?
Sure. Yeah, those guys are out there with chainsaws cutting up the trees already. there's chainsaw bits on rooftops where guys are on top of their house with chainsaws cutting the trees up. Anyway, go ahead.
Okay. Why would a repeater, or how would a repeater have a problem with crossbanding?
We had a long conversation about that last night with Kevin. Only if you have it set up wrong, or you have one that you're making a request that everybody wait for your crossband to work. Because some, in the early days when crossband first started, it was kind of slow. So you'd say, I didn't catch that. You started talking before my radio got keyed up. Can you say that again? So that's a little bit frustrating. But nowadays, they're fast. They're not like that. So that's not an issue. And the other reason is there's four hops, and you have to get a mental picture of this. There's a hop from your handheld to your vehicle, a hop from your vehicle to the repeater, a hop from the repeater back to your vehicle, a hop from your vehicle back to your handheld. That's four hops. One of those four, and only one of those four, do you have to have a CW identifier on it. And the one of the four is where your vehicle calls back to your handheld with what they're saying on the repeater. That one, to make it legal, has to identify on that frequency. Because everything else is identified. When you key your handheld, you're on 70 centimeters, you're identifying. It's hitting 2 meters. It's that same thing as going out on 2 meter identifying. So that meets the FCC requirements. In the reverse direction, other people that are using the repeater are identifying, and it's identifying. But when it hits your truck and your truck comes to your handheld, that's a transmission that you're responsible for. So you have the ID coming back to your handheld on that frequency, which the guys on the repeater will never hear any of that. But what people do is they get it wrong, and they put the identifier on the 2 meters going out to the repeater, and then they're identifying, and the CW identifier is identifying, and therefore it's very frustrating to the repeater owner. So they just, if they get too frustrated, they're just going to say don't use it because they get tired of explaining it over and over again what people are doing wrong.
Well, okay, let's say I was crossbanding. If I use 440 from the HT to the truck and 2 meter out to the repeater, and then it comes back 2 meter to the radio in the truck, and then 440 out to the HT, there's no way I could have an issue with that, right?
Not as long as you're not asking them to slow down for your crossband repeating, and as long as your identifier that's going out is coming out of your truck on 70 centimeters and to your local area, not coming out on 2 meters going back up to the repeater, W4DJW.
About if it's going back out at 440 from the vehicle to the handheld, the repeater can't hear that, can it?
No, it cannot. No. If you use crossband repeat correctly, nobody will know you're crossband repeating unless you tell them.
Okay. All right. And I've never really had a problem with speed either because, man, that Yaesu 8900 of mine, it's like green lightning.
Well, they're not as, I mean, they're a lot better now than they were when they first came out. When they first came out, they were kind of sluggish, but they're pretty fast now. So a lot of people use it. I use it around here all the time. I don't think anybody knows when I am using it, when I'm not. Same with Johnny. He does the same thing.
Yeah, I know what you mean. And I'll tell you something else I do, too. I never use more than about 5 or 10 watts into the truck or from the truck back out.
And that's probably way more than you need, right? As long as it's line of sight. Or you're in that general ground wave vicinity, you'd probably get by with, if your radio would go lower, that's the problem. some radios don't go. I use extra low power on my Kenwood, which is like 10 milliwatts. That's all you need.
Well, see, sometimes I'm using more than that for the simple reason that I'm trying to transmit back into a metal building or something like that that my truck is parked next to.
Recognizing Jerry. And there's nothing wrong with that, Steve. The FCC requirement is no more than is required to get your signal. If it requires 5 watts, use 5 watts. Go ahead, Jerry.
Hey, Dave, I was after talking to you guys last night about this. I knew you'd talk about the same thing. But my D710G, when I sit on the CWID or MCID IDs out on both frequencies, so that's where the issue comes in with this particular one. I'm not real sure how to turn that part of it off either.
Well, there you go. All right, that's another thing. If it's doing that, then you don't need to be identifying yourself. You just let the CW identifier do it. Well, no, you do, because you're on your handheld. From your handheld to your vehicle has to identify. So, yeah, that could get frustrating for a repeater owner if you can't figure out how to get that hop turned off.
That's one of those things that's supposed to be a feature, but it's a bug, I think. I don't know if it's just the 710 or whether it's the P71 or not. I mean, I'm not sure if all of them do it or not. I know the 710 does, because that's one reason I don't do it anymore, because I was hearing multiple CWIDs, and I decided just to turn mine off. And if you can turn the CWID off, but then you don't get your CWID or back to your handheld either. It's an issue with that particular radio. I don't know if it is with other ones or not, but it's with mine anyway. I just don't use it anymore. That's what when I was talking to Kevin the other day about it, Steve, too. That's what I just based it on my experience with my radio, and I should have realized all brands don't do the same. I know the Yaesu's and the Icons don't do that, evidently, not from anything I've understood.
Yeah, it seems like the 700 did that too, the D700, the predecessor to the 710, which I don't have any anymore, but it seems like that one did that too, W4DJW.
Okay, at 4VWA. One last question, Dave. I want to put a 2-meter 440 in my shack. You've been out to my place, and I can just barely hit Mount Mitchell with my Balfang. But I can. That's at 8 watts. With that outside diamond antenna, you think I'd be just fine doing a 25-watt on a fixed base right here at the house?
It depends. I would think so, yeah. That'd be my first answer. But you know how sometimes you can move, you're sitting in your car, and you're transmitting 15, 20 watts or 50 watts even, and you let your foot off the brake and it rolls a foot forward, and all of a sudden you can't hear anything and nobody can hear you, and you let your foot off the brake and it rolls a foot forward and everybody can hear you and you can hear everybody. That's that same phenomenon applies regardless.
Well, I hope my shack is not going to move. No, I'm just teasing. Well, I think I'm just going to go ahead and buy myself. I cannot find the radio that I really want. They don't make the, apparently they don't make an 8900 Yaesu anymore. And, I do want something that I can just stick in the shack and use over here. So, see what I can come up with on something cheap out here. All right, well, listen, you have a good afternoon. And both of you guys carry on, and I will talk to you later. KN4VWA, clear up, y'all.
Hey, Steve, it's a pretty inexpensive dual-band Yaesu. It's got Fusion, too, but it's, I think that thing's under $200. I keep remembering the model number of it now, but it's a really expensive compact radio, but it's a dual-bander. I think it does 50.
7250, FT7250, and I was kind of hoping to get something that would crossband. That way I could run around my, Dave knows what I'm talking about, that way I could run around my property out here and crossband with my little Balfang and not have to worry about being down over the hill over here and being able to get out. So that's that's what I was kind of hoping to do, is find something like that. But like I said, they've discontinued that 8900, which, and they don't have anything to replace it that's under $500. So, and I've already got an HF radio, so, you know, hey, I'm looking around. Anybody out there got a used 8900? I'm clear, you guys. Have a good afternoon.
Catch you later, Steve. Be safe. W4DJW.
At least explains what I was talking about the other night to them when they were bringing it up. I knew there was something. I thought, well, now, wait a minute. Now, I was had to go back and get some notes on how I set my D710 up. And that's the deal. I don't know. Like I said, it's, I don't know if the, I guess the 700 may do it, too. I don't know if the V718 does that or not.
I've only put the V71A in crossband repeat mode one time just to see if it worked, and it did, and that was pretty cool. But I had that's when I was setting it up for EchoLink, and it was the EchoLink mode for, like, I don't know, close to 10 years, not quite 10 years, but a little less. But and now a 710 is the EchoLink mode, but its software does its all of its identifying. Yeah, I haven't taken any time to check that out either. I do the, when I'm crossbanding, it's from a Kenwood TH-D7 to a TS-2000 and back. That's the one I'm most familiar with. I've tried it out on other radios, but not enough really to know anything about how they really work.
The Kenwood's the D710GA and even the little 28 handheld. You can't use DTMF control on those to control the radios anymore. That's a certain serial number. So that 2000 is really the jewel of the Kenwood line, I think, because it's got everything on it, and you can use Sky Command on it too, I think, can't you?
Yes, you can. And Sky Command is really cool because you can be out in the yard and you can change your frequency. Or if somebody's using an old rig and they're drifting, right? The older rigs used to drift on single sideband and they start sounding like Donald Duck. You can change the frequency on the 2000 with the handheld using Sky Command. You can rotate it up. You can follow them as they drift. So you tune them in. I used to use that quite a bit too. That, like, when I was out working in the yard, I would leave that running. The only problem with that is when it's in that mode, you couldn't get it to not idle out. So if you were busy working or something like that, and you had it sitting out there just because you wanted to listen, in about 40 minutes or 50 minutes or whatever that was, the thing would just shut off. And you'd have to get up and go sort of turn it back on. That's the only, and that's if you're not transmitting. If you're transmitting, it's not an issue. But if you're just listening, that was the only thing I could find wrong with Sky Command. Otherwise, it worked flawlessly.
The things I had intention of using that little handheld of mine for the 710, but it would do that same type of control with it, with the DTMF. But now the serial numbers are such now that you can't do it anymore. Both of them were too new to incorporate that, to still have that option incorporated into the radio. I don't know why they stopped doing it, because it was an ideal situation. I mean, you could just pre-program your DTMF codes like you can with most any radio. And it wasn't as good as Sky Command. I think the 710 would do that too with the 2000 and some other radios. But I'm thinking that I don't know if the D72 handheld does that or not. I don't think it does. And I know the 74A doesn't do it. But anyway, it was a good option to have handy, especially if you had your station set up like that. You could do about anything you wanted to with it, really.
I remember W4DJW. I was trying to figure out what the limits of it were, and I set it up on. This is before the 710 came out. This is when the 700 was the radio that you could use. That you could do it with a handheld, or you could do it with a 700 to the TS-2000. So I set it up in my car just like it was set up on my handheld, and got in the car and went to Starbucks. And I was talking on HF, and because I got 2 meters and 70 centimeters back and forth to the house, and then the house did the HF out. So I was using three bands at one time. And it was working good until I got to Ingalls, and then the 70 centimeters, the length ran out before, and that was only like two-thirds of the way to Starbucks. So talking to somebody, and then all of a sudden I was gone. But I was thinking I was uptown. I was doing HF in a mobile with a 2-meter, 70-centimeter antenna, and it was fantastic. It was really good, really clear, really fast. I liked it a lot, but the 70-centimeter side kind of limited the distance that you could go on that.
And there's no doubt about it. Like I said, I don't know if this would do a Sky Command or not. I don't have an HF rig anyway, but the other part of being able to control, this rig was handheld. Like I said, that's one of those moot points now. What the serial number it is, it won't do it. It had to be an older one to I think both of them actually, I think the handheld and the mobile rig both have to be below a certain serial number in order to still operate in that mode. But that's a cool mode to be able to walk around and do all that sort of stuff and just with a handheld.
Well, that's one time you get a benefit from having old stuff, because all of my TS-2000s are way better than 10 years old. So every now and then you win one.
That's one of those radios that it's just a great radio. I mean, you don't see them. You know, people that are selling more premium prices for them, there's a reason for that, because they'll do just about anything you want them to. And it's really unusual back, you know, Kenwood keeps his stuff in their lineup for a long time before they swap model numbers, you know, before they come out with a new model. So it amazes me that they still have something like that in the lineup that's not quite as expensive as the top of the line one is now.
Well, they put a lot of thought into it, too, because they're the only one I know of that had that Sky Command capability. So they put a lot of engineering, a lot of thought, so they like to get their money's worth out of it. That's perfectly fine with me as long as they do a good job, and they did a really good job on those. If only I have one thing gone wrong between those two Kenwoods, and that was the receive went out. I think no, the receive was working, but the audio wouldn't come out. And that was shortly after I was really abusing it, because I was driving keying CW. I was keying it with the computer. And I was, because there were some guys down on 40 meters or 20 meters, I can't remember, on the lower part. And they were doing really fast CW. There's no way a human could keep up with them. So I rigged mine all up to be able to talk to them, and I was not, it was doing the break-in CW, not the you modulate a tone and or modulate a signal and then you hit a tone on top of that. That's easy to go 100 words a minute, but actually keying the receiver or transmitter on and off, sending high-speed CW, after a while, I broke the TS-2000. I had to send it back to Virginia Beach, and they fixed it and sent it back to me, but that was a lesson learned. Don't do that anymore.
I've always liked the Kenwood stuff, especially mobile rigs and HF rigs. And I've had a couple of Kenwood handhelds over the years, and they've always been good. I did pick up one of those J2 FT3DRs the other week. I couldn't restrain myself, and I'm using it for SO50 now because it can do a split band. It's not the best way to do it because it's not a full duplex rig, but I can do split band. Have the transmit frequency and receive frequency programmed in the same memory that I can train. I can just spin the dial and track it as the Doppler changes on the downlink on the UHF downlink. Same thing on the uplink on some of the other ones. But I made a few contacts with it on 5 watts with that elk antenna I got. And I just ordered an air antenna. It's got the duplex in it. It's got three elements on two, and I think about 8 or 10 on. Maybe 7 or 8 on 440, 430, I mean. And I'm going to see if that's a little better. It's a little bit. The elk is a small antenna, you know, but it's not. It's kind of cumbersome because since it's a log type antenna, it's got the antenna feed at the front. It makes it kind of cumbersome to be able to twist it, that sort of thing, without getting tangled up in the coax.
Give the repeater a little break there and see if anybody else wanted to come in. So you caved We've both been looking at that radio for a while, and you finally caved. I haven't caved yet, but I might. I still go back and look at YouTube videos of it. Well, I'm glad it's working out okay for you. I'm not familiar with that antenna that you're talking about. The only one I know of that you can do that with and that I've seen on the videos the most is the one Arrow has that has the orange elements. Not orange, they're purple elements and a square tube. I've got that, but not combined. I've got a 70-centimeter one of those and a 2-meter one of those, but not combined on the same boom. But that's when I was really working it with two separate antennas and two separate radios on the rotator, X and Y axis antenna rotator. But I've been tempted to go out there and try to do it, but I don't think I could be coordinated enough. Do you have to program those Doppler shift frequencies in, and you use like a memory channel for each one of them, and you just have to flip it one memory channel as it starts drifting, as the Doppler starts changing?
The Kenwood is harder to deal with, but the Kenwood, the 710, for instance, is full duplex, and you can hear yourself on the downlink, and you can program both VFOs, VF swap VFOs with it. But on the Yaesu, you can program. What I do is like the on the SO50, I just program this. I think it's 145.850 up. With a 67 hertz tone, and I just program like, let's see, five memories. I program like the downlink on it is 435 and 436, 795 is the center one, and then I move up 5 to 805, then one to 810, and 810 is like the acquisition signal, and I start out there, 805, yeah. Yeah, 805 is the is acquisition of signal. I got 805 there, and you'd like to start hitting them about 800. And that satellite hears really well, so you don't need to run 5 watts to get in pretty easily. And I just turn the memories down where I go acquisition of signal 1, start there, then 2, then hit the center frequency at 795, then the loss of signal 1 and loss of signal 2, and tune down that way. If you're above the right, if you've got a good view of both horizons, you can work it down to probably about 10 degrees. I heard some guys on, I heard a guy on this morning working AO91, and he was, there were some guys in Puerto Rico working through that, and it was almost a vertical pass, about 87 degrees. I didn't try to get into that because this is a little different. Well, that getting into a little run more power with the 91, but 50 is pretty easy to work. And since my memory is terrible, I just really just got that Yaesu that has a built-in voice recorder, so I can record it. That way, if I missed a grid or call, can't remember it, I can always play it back and make sure I got the grid and call correct time. But it's, like I said, I work, I've had the radio maybe about a week, and I've worked, every time I went out on SO50 above, if it's above 30 degrees or so, I've worked somebody, one or two. It might have been Friday. I worked like four stations on one pass.
So when SO50 was coming over, how big of a footprint was it making? How much of that footprint did you use?
The fact I made on it on that radio was one day, I think it was one day last week, maybe a week ago. I've had it more than a week. It seemed like it was on a Thursday or Friday or something. And the pass was like at 60 or 65 degrees, and I worked a guy in Iowa. That's pretty big, WZOSAT. He's a pretty prolific satellite operator. I worked him, and then I worked guys in Indiana, and depending on which way the pass is going, Indiana, and guys in Florida, and worked a guy in Vancouver on one pass, not Vancouver, it was a Canadian, I can't remember which province it is now, but I didn't get his grid, so I didn't count it, and I don't think he even had the recorder on then. But I think the pass is just slightly north of me. I seem to be able to do a little better than I can to the south. And but working into Indiana, Illinois, Ohio, that area is not too hard. Of course, you get a lot of people in Virginia in local area, but footprint must be pretty big on it, Dave, because I don't have, I mean, I work a lot more, seem to be able to get a lot more people than I do when I get through to the Digipede on the satellite.
That's what makes satellites so cool. You're talking to people in Indiana, Iowa, Florida on 2 meters and 70 centimeters. That's just, and a handheld at 5 watts. That is just really cool. That's what got me into it. I want to get back into that again and get back with my, I'm not as coordinated as you are with all of those shifting the frequencies and getting keying up and 70 centimeters and 2 meters. It's just too much. That's why I built, it's a whole lot easier for me just to build an antenna tracker that tracks it and let it take care of itself. And then I'll just work the radio. Make it a lot easier. It takes more time to get there, but it's a lot of fun. I enjoy that. It's the journey, not the destination.
And my brother-in-law's an engineer. He works at Georgia Tech and has for years. And I was telling him about the setup he had, and he said, "That is the coolest thing I've ever heard." I said, "I was astonished that somebody else had thought, 'cause I've never heard anybody else using that setup with it." I mean, a lot of people use two handhelds, but they use them with these handheld beams, you know, like I've got. But and really using that half duplex like I do on the Asia, that's probably not 100%, you know, the way you should be able to hear yourself on a downlink. But with 5 watts, I'm certainly not stepping on anybody. And I always just listen for breaking the signal and drop my call sign. Somebody's come back to me just about every time I've called. Where my location is, it's got to be above the trees for me. I can't get through the vegetation on 5 watts, but this is a decent pass for me. I can usually get in this lot. I mean, with that handheld antenna, you can just kind of twist it to change the polarization, and, you know, it just snaps in sometimes.
So before the satellite comes over, like, do you plan that 15 minutes or whatever it turns out to be, depending on how high it is on the horizon or how low it is on the horizon? Do you plan that out so that, and are you looking at your watch and you're basing where you're pointing the antenna based on what time it is, or are you just out there hunting for it and trying to follow it? Which way do you do that?
I never figure that out. That's more in your territory, Dave, not mine. Well, I've just got a tracker app on my iPhone that alerts me when one's coming over. I can set it for 10 minutes, 15 minutes before. And then it's got a radar screen that gives you the elevation and the azimuth of it. And what it does, it shows it live tracking across the sky. So you can point your beam that way. You know, that, if you've got some idea of the elevation, you can track across the sky that way. Now, these iPhone apps, some of them are not, they're not as accurate as what you were using on your station by any stretch of imagination. But they're accurate enough where you can get pretty close. I mean, I know I can track it. Just it'll basically looks like a little screen on your thing there, and it'll show look like it's going to be coming in this direction, and you see where it tells you. It's like a pointer that goes across the screen that tells you where to point your antenna, and on the left hand side of the screen it shows you the elevation. You know, like, yes, guys, actual elevation. Some guys actually velcro them to the to their boom on the antennas and follow them that way. You know, there's some really bright guys out there that figured all this stuff out a lot better than I have. It ain't my idea.
Okay, so instead of looking down at your clock, you're just looking down at the phone and knowing the elevation by the left hand side of the screen and knowing the position by the right hand side of the screen. And so, yeah, because I have watched videos where I'm looking at what time it is, and they're still pointing over the horizon, and that guy's straight up overhead by now, right? And then they'll figure that out, and they'll pull it up really quick and catch up with it because it kind of gets away from them. Or if they're talking to somebody, they're just constantly fishing for it until they get the best signal. But that's cool. I like that. W4DJW.
JC Friday. Yeah, I that's really what got me started back in it. After being absent for 25 years is when I started checking on it and got interested in satellite in it, because I really don't have a good spot an antenna here and a tower. It takes a 70-foot tower for me to get above the vegetation if one would work HF or even one to, you know, put a beam up high enough to be able to do anything of any interest. So I decided to do that. And the nice thing about taking thrust up in your car or your truck and take off somewhere, if you want to get to a clear spot, you just on the side of the road there, you got your antenna up to your handheld and get your app out and start weighing. You know it's going to be overhead somewhere, and you can, and you, since the phones have built-in GPSs in them, they can tell your location changes. It can tell you, you know, where the direction changes and the azimuth changes. You know, so you can, it's a lot of, you can just drive somewhere and get a clear spot out in the middle of the field, or we don't have any obstructions up ahead. And a lot of these guys, I have not been able to do this because of vegetation. A lot of these guys say they can, some of these guys, even with handheld antennas, have been able to track it like two or three degrees above the horizon. And the FM satellites like SO50 and 91 and 92, those things, they have a fairly, I mean, you may have as long as 15 minutes to grab those. I mean, that's not it's not like 30, 40 seconds. You've got a good bit of time. You can work several people if you've got a clear view of the horizon on both sides.
And for HHC.
Hey, Warren. I'm sorry if we left you out, but that is very interesting, Jerry. I'm definitely going to get back into that when I free up some of the projects I'm on right now. My next project is going to be building a Raspberry Pi cluster for distributed computing number crunching. I've been doing a bunch of research on that, but I've still got my antenna tracker. I'll be getting back to that. Go ahead, Warren, and I'm going to go on crossband repeat, but I'm going to be just listen only. I got to put on a pot of coffee. W4DJW.
Let's see, N4DJC. This is N4HHC, Warren. Now, I'm very interested in the satellite. I've got some of the equipment. I did get the Arrow handheld antenna, and I've got Kenwood's D72 little handheld that's full duplex. Then I've got the Kenwood TS 2000, but I probably need a little Elmering there. Over.
Warren, you've got all the right stuff. That's for sure. 2000 is a great radio. The D72 is full duplex. It's a great rig. It's been a lot of people have used them. They've worked hundreds and hundreds of contacts with them. I don't have a 72. I had a 74, but the 74 went full duplex. Without having that ability to full duplex, I mean, like I've got a Yezi, and the Yezi works fine, but it's not full duplex. But being able to hear your signal on the downlink, that way you know you're getting into the satellite. And I mean, if you're running some power, it makes some difference. And you know, but there's the D72 is really probably about the best handheld rig out there, unless somebody wants to run two radios. But you have to be able to swap BFOs to track it on the 72 because since you don't have that ability to put a VHF and a UHF band in the same memory, but you can still do the same thing. One of the things about the Doppler is you don't have, you know, if you've got a VHF downlink like some of them have, the only thing you have to change is the Doppler is on the uplink, the same thing on the UHF downlink. You don't have to change the uplink frequency at all. You know, 2 meters, you just don't, very seldom do you have to change this. It's wide enough where you can get into it. It'll capture, especially SO50, it'll capture signal real easily. It's got really good set of ears on it. It's, you know, you can get into it easily with 5 watts and an arrow.
And listening to them, I get out there in the yard and I print out my little sheet. I'm going to AMSAT, and I print out my little sheet to let me know what time and what, you know, I get that all figured out beforehand, you know, so I can have an idea. I point my antenna in this direction, and I don't go above so many degrees on the horizon, and I end up over this direction. And I've been able to hear, you know, a lot of activity. I've just I've not tried to make too many contacts, but I've never been able to make one yet. Over.
Have you been trying to work one?
Is it 91 or 92? I'd have to look it up. I can't even remember now.
I can't remember that right. 92 right now, I think, is, I'm not sure if that's got a 1296 uplink or not. They swap one of those pretty often the uplinks don't change from like 432 to 1296 or whatever it is. It's, it's in the gigahertz, 1.2 gigahertz frequencies, and that requires a totally different setup. But as long as the uplink is on 70 centimeters or 2 meters, you should be able to work that with a 7072 easily. And I think SO50 is probably the AO91 now is very loud. And that one, sometimes they swap it over uplink, downlink frequencies and that too, but it has a you can hear it real easy. And I think it's 145, I want to say it's 960, but it may be 860. I don't have my stuff in front of me right now, but it's got a strong downlink frequency. But the key to all those is whatever your uplink frequency is, if you're changing it as you go, you got to have that 67 hertz tone on all your uplink frequencies, otherwise you won't get into it at all. And the, let the repeater drop out. It's a loud signal of somebody just dropping your call and your grid one time, and they'll either hear you or they won't hear you. And the other thing I would recommend, something that makes it easier for me, because I'm an old guy, my memory's not so hot, is to hook one of these expensive digital recorders up to your D72. That way when you get on, you can listen and record, and that way if you miss a call or miss a grid, you can refer back to your recording. That's one thing that the D74 has, and the Yaesu FT3 has. It's got, built-in voice recorders. And so it makes it a little easier. You don't have to start scribbling stuff down or anything like that. But that tone is very important, and using an app on an Android or an iPhone is a lot easier than trying to write it down. Man, then you can get live tracking, because the thing about those TLEs is, that telemetry, these different satellites, it can change sometimes. It may not be, if you got one from yesterday, it may not be the same. Hours later can change, and the azimuth can change a little bit. It's a little easier to follow on some type of app where it's got a live track in it. We know exactly where to point your antenna and know your elevation too, because if you're out in the open somewhere, field or somewhere, a baseball field someplace is pretty vacant, it doesn't have any vegetation or anything, or trees or anything around, and you can see a rising rising, you've got a lot of time where you can listen to that satellite and track it. And I think SO50 is a little bit, but AO91 and 92, they are really crowded on the weekends. Those are, if you got to pass late at night or early in the morning when nobody else is around, that's probably the best time to work those. And SO50 is always busy on the weekends. It's better during the week, mid-odd times too, but it's still busy. But being able to hear yourself on downlink is important, but 9 times out of 10, people that aren't able to get in don't have that tone on.
To hurry up and get this quarantine over with, and I'm going to have to come over and have you give me a couple of lessons here and make sure I got the equipment set up right. Over.
No problem at all. Now, I've got a D72 file, programming file set up for some of the satellites, and if you look me up on QRZ, my call sign, N4DJC, you can drop me an email with your email in it, and then I'll see if I can't get that file and attach that file, and you can, it's just a PDF, I think I've got the actual file, and I also got a PDF file of it too for the 72, and I can just send that thing over to you, and then you can look at the settings. This comes from a guy that's really done a lot of work with satellites, and he's got D72 files, D74 files, and he's worked a bunch of them over the last few years, and he makes it available to the general public, and I copy it from his Dropbox file. But that's the way to do it. That way you can look at all your settings and see exactly the way these guys do, because they worked out all the details on the best way to handle these satellites when you're dealing with a Doppler shift.
Jerry, I'll send you an email. I'm on my email's on QRZ as well, but I'll send you an email. I'll look that up and send you one. Yeah, so I was looking here on my iPhone here, the SO50, and you got the PL tone you got to have and things like that. But I don't know, just seemed like something, I'm not doing something right or whatever. But I know it's been pretty busy too, so that's another thing. But anyway, I definitely would look forward to it. So I've got the 74 and the 72, but I know the 72 is a full duplex. But I had tried to use the record feature on my iPhone to do the recording, and I thought that might work pretty well. Over.
Cumbersome, Warren, but one thing a lot of these guys do is use two handhelds. When they're doing that, with a D-74, you got the ability to record on the SD card both sides of the conversations. That's built in. And even though it's not full duplex, you can still use the D-74 and record as a single radio. As I said, it's not, they want you to be able to hear your downlink, but if you're getting into it, you don't have to worry too much about it. But, with both those radios, you can work just about anything out there, because both of them have APRS capability, too, on top of that. So you could work the space station. Of course, it's not hearing very well right now. You can work it pretty easily normally, too, but it's not hearing very good from my location now. But either one of those radios would be fine. The 72 is by far, that's the one most people choose if they're using a single radio. And I'm supposing that your error has a duplex built in.
This is N4HHC. The arrow does have the built-in, they call it the diplexer. It's a little bit different than duplexers on a repeater. But it does have that built-in, so you got one connection to a radio and two bands. Over.
He's in an elk slope. Five element law periodic. It's got everything on one plane. It's not cross. It doesn't have the. It's a lot more compact. But it's a little bulkier handling it because it's only about 25 inches long. But the way that on a law periodic, you feed it from the front. It makes it kind of difficult to twist it around sometimes. Unlike the air, is a little easier to deal with. It may notch a little better too, but. You've also got three elements on two on it, this elk is a good antenna if you want to throw something in the trunk. But I don't think it's quite as doesn't have as much gain by any stretch of imagination as the Era does. I think the Era is probably a better overall antenna. It's a little bit easier to handle. But this one doesn't require a diplexer. It's basically a long periodic with dipole elements. It's about what it is. But it's not very big. It's a good little antenna. It works pretty good on SO50, but some of the other stuff, it's not quite as good on 430 as it is on 2 meters, I don't think.
Have you worked any sideband on any of the satellites, or are you all FM?
Sideband capability. All I've got is I got a couple of handhelds, and I've got a D710G8 Kenwood, and I don't use it much for anything because it's just hard to move it outside, that sort of thing, although I have done it before. I've used it for APRS on space station a number of times, but with all the new equipment and stuff on the space station, now it's going to get interesting later in the year when they start getting all that stuff set up there. They actually will have the voice repeater set up again. With a 145-800 downlink and a 144.9 or something like that uplink, And they're going, in addition, be able to use that voice repeater that I was going to have astronauts joining in on conversation. And they got four or five or six new Kenwood 710Gs up there, and they're going to have one set up for a packet, I mean, APRS digit repeater. And it's now going to be 10 watts. Right now, they've got an old it's an old Ericsson, and it's going to run about a watt or so. And the repeater's going to be running 5 out, and the voice downlink now is going to be running 25 out. So they got some stuff up there planned that's going to be interesting for the space station and within the next year or so. It just depends on how quick they get it set up. But they're still running a 20-something, you know, the radio they're running right now, one is about over 20 years old, N4DJC Friday.